I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo. As the store's owner, I want our clients treated with respect. I want our employees to have extensive product knowledge and be genuinely engaged with our clients. Our pricing is competitive, but our client attention is second to none. When considering a new car, consider Cherry Hill Volvo. Contact me directly. Relationships really do matter to us.
The Rich Cioli Show Podcast.
All right, joining us now, Talk Radio 1210, WPHJ, CBSPhilly.com/Rich. Ronald Bailey is the science correspondent for Reason.com, my favorite libertarian site. And he's here today to tell us everything we ever wanted to know about flood insurance. Ronald Bailey, thanks for joining us in Philadelphia.
I'm delighted to be with you.
I don't have flood insurance. My house is not too far away from the Delaware River on the Jersey side. Should I have flood insurance?
Are you in a 100-year floodplain?
I have no idea.
Well, you should go look that up.
Okay.
But presumably, if you have a mortgage, your mortgage holder would have already told you to buy it if you were. But you might want to take a look anyway.
Well, how does flood insurance work? Is it private insurance similar to car insurance and property insurance?
No, absolutely not. Up until a couple of years ago, the only place you could buy flood insurance was from the federal government. The National Flood Insurance Program was created in 1968, and it's ended up as a terrible mess.
And so, take Harvey, for example. A lot of the people in Houston did not have flood insurance. I think they said 80 to 85% of the people did not have it. So what happens to them in a situation like this?
Well, that's a very interesting question. What usually is going to happen is what happened in Katrina and also what happened in Sandy is that Congress is going to pass some emergency legislation and provide for loans and all that kind of thing. Basically, it's kind of a mess. What happens, the idea of flood insurance is that in the 1950s and 60s, the federal government was noticing that they were, in fact, having to Congress was having to provide all kinds of money for people after natural disasters, mostly floods in this particular case. So Congress had this idea, well, let's stop doing that. Let's make people insure themselves. Well, that sounds like a really great idea, right? If, you know, that way the Congress doesn't have to do it because the insurance companies would do it, or the National Flood Insurance Program would do it because the premiums would pay for whatever damages occurred. Well, that didn't work out very well. In fact, the National Flood Insurance Program is $25 billion in the red now, and it's going to be considerably more in the red after what happened in Houston. And why is that? Largely because there are a lot of properties that got flood insurance that are not paying enough premium. Basically, what the government is doing is subsidizing people to build in floodplains. Get this, about 1% of the properties between 1980 and 2015 who have gotten flood insurance payments account for 30% of those payments. 1% account for 30% of the payments. Some houses have been rebuilt 4 and 5 and 6 times. That's crazy. Don't build in a floodplain. The government is encouraging people to build houses in the way of hurricanes and areas of riverine flooding. Just stop it.
Right. Yeah, or let them build on their own and absorb their own risk.
Correct.
Without us subsidizing it. Because we are subsidizing it, Ronald Bailey, correct?
That is correct. We are. There is an analysis that came out by the insurance companies recently that basically said that on average, the premiums the government flood insurance program asks for is about half of what the actual cost would be.
Say that one more time, please.
The premiums that the National Flood Insurance Program collects from people are half of what they should actually be if you're actually covering the risks.
Oh, okay, so then I have to ask them the very simple question, Ronald Bailey. Why do they not actually reflect what is actually, in fact, the inherent risk that you are trying to mitigate here?
Well, in one way, what happened is that every time that they've tried to reform it, what happens is the premiums go up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is that the people go to their congressman and say, I can't afford this. So Congress goes back and says, you have to lower them. And they do.
Ronald Bailey is the award-winning science correspondent for Reason Magazine and Reason.com. He's also the author of a book, The End of Doom, Environmental Renewal in the 21st Century. Very happy to have him on the show today. I read your work quite a bit, and I've always been impressed by it. All right, so taxpayers are subsidizing people who choose to build and live in the floodplains, and then we're paying for their houses to be rebuilt and then potentially flooded again. And my other question is, why is there no private insurance market for this?
Well, in the first place, it was preempted. The federal government made sure that the private industry couldn't go in. But part of the reason there was no private industry or private flood insurance back in the 60s and 70s and so forth is because the insurance companies took a look at it and said, we can't cover these risks, which should tell people if the private industry doesn't think that they can cover these risks. They can cover fire, for example, and wind damage and that kind of thing. But if they say they can't cover this, that is telling the person who wants to build a house or a business in that area, don't do that. And it wasn't a market failure. The government stepped in and started subsidizing it. What should have been done is, well, now let's build somewhere else. And instead, now we have lots more people living in areas that are more dangerous for them and more dangerous for their property. And that's really a bad idea.
In some ways, it also incentivizes people to continue to build in these areas and gives them a false sense of security, thinking that they'll be covered. But where they are, you know, where they're rebuilding their homes is, I mean, with addition to being flooded, I mean, there's so much catastrophe that goes around that. In some ways, you're almost putting people at greater risk by offering the National Flood Insurance Program.
That's exactly right.
All right. Here's my next question then for you, Ronald Bailey. If they were to get rid of the program tomorrow, then that would never happen. So you said it's $25 billion in the red. Is that right?
Billion in the red as of August. Now, thanks to Harvey, considerably more.
And when does Congress have to renew it?
It has to be renewed at the end of September.
So politically speaking right now, there's no way they would not renew it right after a major storm like this. So then the only question is, how much money will they make it solvent this time around, or will they just continue to kind of keep it in the red?
Given the dynamic, and I don't do politics, I do policy, but right. The dynamic that I see is that Congress is going to kick the can further down the road and hope for some sort of fiscal miracle that will never occur.
Ronald Bailey, science correspondent for Reason Magazine and Reason.com. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. We appreciate it.
And thank you for having me.
Rich Scioli, 3 till 6. Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.